This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
This is the CRM Archaeology Podcast. It's the show where we pull back the veil of cultural resources management archaeology and discuss the issues that everyone is concerned about. Welcome to the podcast. Welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 232 for February 8th, 2022. I'm your host, Chris Webster. And on today's show, we talk about working with COVID and how the field has forever been changed, some for good, some for bad. So go get fitted for your N95 because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. Welcome to the show, everyone. Joining me today is Heather in California.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining.
Andrew in California.
Hey, guys. What's up?
And Doug in Scotland?
Yeah, I'm in Scotland. I'm back. Okay. I've been back for a couple of weeks now.
All right. Just making sure. I wasn't sure where you were at and what you were doing. Speaking of Doug, we're rotating topics through the hosts as we move along now. It's kind of a new-ish thing we're trying. We've tried it in the past, but I think it's working out pretty well right now. And this week is Doug's topic. So, Doug, what are we talking about today?
Well, it's following on from the podcast, like two podcasts ago, about COVID and how it's changing the way we work. And I know we're somewhat, I can't figure out the right way to describe it. We've moved to a new phase of the pandemic where it's mm-hmm. less lockdowns and more, living with it.
Yeah.
But it's to see how things have changed and how do you guys imagine things will be permanently changed into the future
mm-hmm.
and how we're going to be dealing with COVID since essentially it's not going away and we just keep getting new variants and we're doing less lockdowns and fewer people are dying because of vaccines, but vaccines are only pretty much preventing deaths, not so much of people getting quite sick or having to take time off work, which is going to probably impact us well into the future as it's probably one of the, well, it seems to be keep getting more and more infectious. And likely, you know, if you have a field crew and people come down with COVID, that means your entire crew's likely to come down with COVID unless we keep up a lot of the sort of protocols that we've implemented over the last 2 years. So it's to see how things have changed for you guys and how you think things are going to be changing in the future for work and, you know, also things like field schools and various other public engagement events, whatever, everything that we do in archaeology.
Well, we definitely have some people on the show here that can speak to both of those things. And I'll start off, though, because one of the big things I've noticed that is different is, you know, right when COVID hit, people suddenly realized that, oh, hey, we should probably have a digital solution for archaeology and in a way for people to access data and manipulate data and share data from the field in an easy way. And, you know, I had a heck of a time when I was really doing sales for WildNote. I don't do that anymore. I'm more of a consultant now. But when I was trying to do sales for WildNote and talk to archaeologists, and not only just WildNote, but before that, when I was with Codify and when I was doing my own thing, and it was just an uphill battle. And people were like, nope, what we're doing is fine. You know, we don't need that, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden the pandemic hits and everybody wants to talk to WildNote. Everybody wants a digital solution. You start seeing more and more comments on Facebook, people saying, hey, what are the best tablets out there? I haven't seen the what are the best tablets question more than I have in the last 2 years, right? Because people are finally realizing that they need to do something like that. And I personally think that that will be one of the lasting impacts of COVID. And in fact, on the Archaeotech podcast, and if you're listening to this in real time, it was the last episode that came out. We interviewed somebody up in British Columbia who is developing a completely new application for digital site recording. It's more based on Eastern Canada, basically, as far as where they're starting, but it's an application that's going to be up and coming in the next couple of years. And I hope we get more people into that space. And I think that's a direct result of this need that has formed and will continue once people start doing it. I'm interested to see, Heather, if your company has changed their digital practices at all or enhanced, or if you guys were already doing something that was COVID aware that was that you were able to do with that, or how your procedures changed.
Our procedures have changed in so many different aspects, but specifically when it comes to digital, we were already digital.
Yeah.
It's who is using it. Our company is very open to people doing what works for them as far as team leads go. I was sure. Very big on digital. I love the digital. I guess that's why we get along, Chris. But I think we have our own proprietary, you and I've already talked about that.
Yeah.
Digital forms that work really well, but you know, we're always improving them. And I think more people, obviously, we are looking for efficiency in the field. Not every archaeologist, you know, that's just kind of archaeologists historically really aren't business minded. So they're not always, they're like, I'll get it done when I get it done.
Right.
But this kind of put the pressure on, because when you're working with fewer field crews, I mean, especially in the beginning where there were people who are like, I don't want to work. I'm not going to work. I don't feel comfortable working. And so we were always working really short staffed. And so trying to increase the efficiency was really important. And one way to do that is digital. And so I think from a digital aspect, you know, we all have AHAs, you know, activities, hazards analysis, these JHAs, all these safety protocols that larger companies do. I think smaller companies do them too, but there are certain, especially if you're subbing for a larger company, they're required. And the idea of tailgates, right? So tailgates became something that people really struggled with, I think, on projects. And so we now have tailgates that are, and this is actually kind of a recent creation, but just because the tailgates weren't working and we need, not always, and it's important. I think a lot of times people think, oh, I'll just let the contractor take care of that. I'll just let the construction manager take care of that. And I think sometimes as archaeologists, we're not always really good about the tailgates. So we have created digital means of doing tailgates. I think that's been really big because it also keeps our staff safe. So that is something probably would not have happened. The increase in safety or the focus on safety has been huge. And because of that, which I know we can talk about that later, I think that could probably be a whole segment in and of itself. But the increase and the increased focus on safety has been huge, which is great.
Heather, tailgates. Sorry. Well, all I can think of is like a tailgate on a truck when you say that. What do you mean by tailgates?
Okay, sorry. So tailgates are safety meetings that you have prior to beginning your day. They're very common in the construction industry where everybody, all the crew come together. They have either a safety manager or the foreman will go through all the safety measures for that day. It can go from environmental to we're using these machines and these are the dangers of using these machines, what kind of PPE is required for that day. And sometimes just something specific, like maybe seasonal rattlesnakes or something that's more of a danger right now, certain kinds of, you know, airborne diseases and that sort of thing. And so every day you're supposed to actually, some foremen actually will do a entrance, like a beginning and an end of day also. So not everyone does that, but everybody should at least do the first, and we call them tailgates, but it's a safety analysis and a safety talk. And the larger the company, not necessarily CRM, but the larger the construction company, the more specific roles that you have. So sometimes there are companies that they have people that all they do is safety, and you'll have a safety manager. I worked on a project for 4.5 years where we had somebody who was dedicated just to the safety of the project. He would facilitate a safety or a tailgate meeting in the beginning of every day.
Nice. Yeah, I knew what you meant, Heather, by tailgates, by the way, because, you know, I'm a professional. Unlike
I wish I could say it's a football tailgate.
What's hilarious is I actually remembered after she started to describe it. I'm like, oh, right. Tailgate meeting.
Yes,
I remember that.
Heather, yeah, they're just called health and safety meetings in the UK. Like nothing, so nothing glamorous about
the UK.
Hey, Heather, I was curious, are there any specifics at the moment? I know it's a moving goalpost, but specifics like mask wearing or something for the crew, like in the field?
Right off the bat, we realized that the contagion, I mean, that, you know, that is the most, that's the greatest concern, is still wanting to work in sometimes really compact areas, right? We're in an excavation unit together, mm-hmm. We're always passing tools. So right. The one thing that we did, and you know, I'm not going to say it's been kept up all that well, but I do think that it's probably a really good thing for people to have their own tools. There are certain tools that you have to, like pruning shears or bolt cutters or, you know, things that you're not going to use very often. But every archaeologist had to have their own tools. And so we went and invested in buying tools for every single person. We had to do it really fast. So I just went, and it's funny because I went back. My grandfather was Army. He carried that throughout his life, and he was extremely organized and very big on color coding. And he loved colored electrical tape. So we wrapped every tool with colored electrical tape, and everybody was assigned to a color in the beginning of a project. And it was their job to clean that tool and to store that tool with them. And then at the end of the project, if it was something that we would need to keep for another project, otherwise even their personal tools had to be wrapped with that color. And the idea was you only touch those tools. That's it. No one else does. And it really does help with, you know, keeping the contagious factor minimized. I would say that masks, yes, but a lot of people are already wearing masks. And now, you know, we could get into an argument about what mask works, you know.
I'm just curious about like this nuts and bolts stuff you're talking about. This is cool.
Well, yeah. The mask, everybody's been fitted. All of our crew members and crew supervisors are fitted properly. We actually have somebody who's a professional comes out and fits properly the N95 so people know what size and how to wear it. They're taught how to wear it so it actually works. And I should say, yeah, it's N95 fitting. So it has this little spongy around, so you have a seal. Right. So everybody was fitted if they hadn't already been fitted. We did that for the, what's the name of the?
Valley Fever?
Yes, thank you. My goodness. A lot of times is brought up because of, you know, the dust in the air, especially right. when we're screening and everything, carried with deer mice, the dust when the deer mice poop kind of ends up in the soils and then mixes around.
Not only that, but the silica from sand, if you're in the right areas, gets into your lungs. Yeah.
That is huge. And that,
yeah.
We actually had a recent incident where somebody had a problem because they inhaled. Yeah, I mean, the silica, I don't think people realize that, especially if you've been working in archaeology for a while. You just don't think of that screening being an issue. So now where it used to be not everybody wore a mask, now it's acceptable. Where sometimes people would think, I'm Mr. Tough Guy, I'm a gal, I'm not going to wear a mask. Now it's pretty standard to wear that.
Yeah, the thing with the silica, and I have to get this every year when I do my MSHA refresher, but the thing with the silica is it's, I mean, sure, you could inhale some silica dust or something like that and start coughing right away or something like that, but you don't think of the long-term impacts, and you can actually get like lung cancer and lung damage 10, 15 years later as this builds up in your system. So for you guys as a company to be conscious of these things and concerned with your employees, even though they probably won't be your employees if this ever became a problem with them, it's very admirable, to be honest, because, you know, educating people and saying, hey, it's not going to be a problem now, but if you do this long enough, it will be.
Yeah, I think we're lucky. Our company never shies away from spending money on anything when it comes to safety. And so, you know, everybody is CPR and first aid trained.
Nice.
And we're constantly training people up beyond that CPR and first aid. Mm-hmm. We have people that are dedicated to training and making it fun so that people can constantly walk out and be aware and say, you know what, this is a real possibility that this might happen or that might happen. And I actually had a really funny incident happen with the safety manager. We had somebody scratch themselves with a barbed wire, and we had this conversation about, you know, how could we have improved? And the person that it happened to is as needed. And she was very much just trying to make the safety manager happy and give him a reason. Or he was like, what could you have done that was different? She goes, well, you know, I guess I could have been more aware, you know, it was tall grass and everything. And he's like, so we have a wrap up meeting about how can we do things differently? And he honestly said, he says, so Heather, we suggest that we have all cultural staff understand that it's really important that they're always looking down and aware of what's on the ground. And I just like,
Are you kidding me?
I know. I just started laughing. I'm like, oh, okay. Let me explain to you what we do.
I think that's the first line in Archaeology 101.
Yes.
Right. I think it's really cool, like what you're doing, because what you see there is a bit of a cultural change, like you alluded to, where, you know, the guys are like, I'm too macho to wear this mask. I don't need no mask. But I think there's that positive aspect of like something we can take positive, you know, from the COVID experience, where it's like, hey, it's everyone's cool with wearing a mask all the time. And now, yeah, you won't get COVID and you also won't get silicosis. Right. So it's two for one, you know, and just being safer and realizing that all the stuff that can go in your lungs, now a lot less will happen, which is great.
How many people do you think that were reasonable people left our field because they're like, this is crazy? Like, I'm not going to go and walk through whatever, you know, I'm not going to hang from a cliff so I can make sure I touch everything and look at everything in the survey.
That's I'm sorry. I think that's just such a good point. That's like a whole show right there. Like, you know, we left archaeology because of these dangers. Here's a list.
And now by giving people the tools to keep themselves safe and to say it's okay for, and in fact, not only okay, it is customary and you should be looking to make sure that you're safe. And if you give people the tools, the concept that maybe the older archaeologists would say, oh, well, you know, that just means nobody's going to want to work. Right. No, if you give people the tools to keep them safe, they're going to have the confidence to walk into the field knowing that they're prepared and that they're aware, and they'll do better work.
Absolutely. And that cultural change, you know, that's a rarity and it's a good thing.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that, we're going to change out this segment. So that was a terrible segue. But I'm leaving it in because it's awesome at the same time. Now, anyway, this is great discussion. I know Doug's got some comments coming onto this, and we will tackle that on the other side of the break. Back in a minute.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to episode 232 of the CRM podcast. Heather was bringing up exactly the sort of points I was thinking of, you know, how we're going to change as a profession with sort of health and safety. And some of the things that, to be honest, we probably should have been doing before COVID. Because I was just thinking, like, you know, first year of COVID was the first time I didn't get like a cold or a flu or anything in, I don't know, maybe my entire life. Like, it was incredible. Of course, like, I have a small child, and then she went to nursery, and now, like, you know, I'm going to be sick for the next, like, decade plus nonstop, every single thing, multiple times. But I'm pretty sure, I mean, like, just thinking off of, like, I wonder if anyone's done the calculations of like the billions saved in that mm-hmm. first year from people just not calling in sick to work, or also probably just better productivity for the people who did call in sick, because some places you work and there's that pressure to come in, even if, you know, if you're not dying, you should suck it up. And there's that sort of macho thing that Heather was mentioning, but it includes, like, you know, taking time off work for sick. And of course, the U.S. has really poor rules and regulations regarding, or laws regarding, sick and sick pay and stuff like that. So it's even worse there. But yeah. It's just one of those things where I'm just thinking, you know, we're probably going to be a lot, you know, people are hopefully, I'm hoping it's not going to be like 5 years from now and everyone's like, oh yeah, we did that a while ago. We're no longer, like, you know, using hand sanitizer and all this stuff. But yeah. I do feel like it's probably going to make a lot of companies, a lot of crews a little bit more productive, just because you're not going to have as many people hopefully getting sick. But then I guess the other thing that I don't know, I guess a question for you guys is how you see next sort of COVID coming in next winter. So, like, we just went through a pretty big spike. I know the U.S. is in the middle of the Omicron, however you're supposed to pronounce it, spike. And so that somewhat affected, like, archaeology in the U.K., where, you know, for about a month there, it was a bit tough. Like, you know, a lot of people were getting sick, so that, you know, reduced staff. And it was already tough finding staff. That really put a lot of pressure on companies. It's easy now, but, mm-hmm. you know, essentially England has just said there are not going to be any more requirements or restrictions. So come again next year, it'll be interesting to see, like, are, I don't know, for you guys, maybe Heather, your company's thinking about it. Are you guys just planning on, like, you know, losing a crew for like a week or two each year, because you know COVID's going to hit and it's going to take people out? Because the big thing in the UK is, you know, everything's a lot safer, but the big crunch is transportation. So at the moment, a lot of transportation is like single vehicle use, which is a lot harder to do in the UK, where fewer people have their own vehicles. And, you know, you're a lot more urban sites, so a lot of people rely on public transportation. And, you know, if you're basically, if we go back to almost no legal restrictions, there's going to be a lot of pressure on budgets to not include as many vehicles. And with fewer vehicles, I mean, basically, if you're sticking your entire crew in a truck or something, and one person has COVID, that means everyone has COVID. So how do you guys picture things happening? Not quite this coming summer, but maybe next year or in the future. Is this just going to be mm-hmm. a part of doing business? We expect, like, every year to lose a crew to COVID at some point.
Let's tackle some of the stuff you just brought up, because you had a lot of things in there. And then we'll let Heather answer in for her company. But I wanted to bring something back to one of the original things you said, Doug, talking about not having a cold or something like that, like a regular cold in the first year of COVID. That's something just you heard a lot of the COVID naysayers out there going, oh, it's all COVID now. Remember when we used to talk about the common flu and how many people have that and what's going on? Why don't we do that anymore? It's all COVID. Because nobody actually had it. It was all COVID. Like, we were better at isolating, wearing masks, staying indoors, not shaking hands, doing all those stupid things that actually just transmit disease on a daily basis. And that's one comment there. And then another thing that you addressed with sick time. I think there's a big downside to the embracing of remote work. I mean, I've been remote working for a decade now, and I love it. And I think everybody should investigate that for their positions. However, we got to be careful because, you know, like you said, Doug, sometimes when people were sick before, they felt obligated to go into work, because we do have pretty horrible sick time practices here in this country, and we just expect people to come to work. And now people are pretty aware that, hey, if I'm sick, I probably shouldn't be around other people. But also, if they're already working from home, what are the chances that, unless they're just deathly ill, they're actually going to take a sick day while working at home? Instead, they're probably just going to put in some hours, do some stuff, not take care of themselves, and feel obligated to work because they are at home and they haven't really factored in, or the company's not teaching them how to do that proper work-life balance. That's something I think people need to figure out. And I think, honestly, companies need to tell people, hey, listen, you know, almost penalize them or give them bonuses for not responding to emails after 5 p.m. You know, something like that. Because everything's time stamped. Heather, you don't pay out your salary. So,
yeah. Well, that's even more abusive, actually.
I know. I'm just kidding. Yeah. But it goes to salaried people too, right? Like you're expected to put in 60 hours a week, and that's an age old problem. But now with COVID, more people have been brought into that, right? More people that weren't traditionally in that situation.
I would say more. It applies more to salary. The reason being is that companies are always concerned about people going into overtime. So unless there's some kind of project that can cover overtime, you're always conscious of keeping people within those 8 hours. So I think that as needed and hourly, I would say, I don't think this is any big, you know, news or anything that anybody's considering. I would definitely, if anybody ever gives you a choice, and I've actually had people come to me and ask, please, I want to go on a salary. I'm like, no, you do not want to go on salary. And so, you know, I do think that as far as people having a work-life balance, that is so true. I will say, like, the people I work with are constantly on me. The problem is that the work doesn't go away. Like, you know, I'm working on the weekends. I'm literally getting up at 5 a.m. and I'm working, I'm not kidding, till 9 o'clock at night. We're so busy. There's no way it's going to get done if I don't do that. There's such a dearth of qualified people at a certain level that we just don't have enough people to get everything done. There's a point where I think one thing that companies can do is start saying no. And I know like that's like antithetical to making money, but there's only so much you can do. I mean, sometimes I think across the board, we're going to see in the next, you know, 5, 10 years, even down the road, that there would have been mistakes made and things are going to be litigated and there's going to be challenges specifically with any kind of a regulatory product that, you know, mistakes were made because people were just going too quickly and you couldn't have that QA QC that you should have and having another set of eyes on it to make sure that you had the right approach because you're writing after 15 hours and you're going cross-eyed. And so I do think, you know, the company I work for is, they mean well. We have somebody who's specifically, all they do is wellness for the company.
Yeah.
They create videos. There's something for every single day, if not twice, where there's some kind of meditation or yoga at home. And these are all things that started because of COVID, because they were realizing people were really kind of like sequestered in their house and they weren't taking care of themselves. And so I think that's a really good invention or something that's happened that people are focusing more on wellness. And I always sign up for them and I never go to them. I wish I could, but I have to look at it, you know, and it's just not the priority. Although
you got
to
do it, Heather.
I know it should be. It should be a priority.
I think that's such a great thing that you bring up too, because that's another one sort of culturally in CRM where before this would be like, I don't need no wellness. You know, but now it's like it's such a thing, and it's so healthy to do that wellness and mindfulness kind of stuff, even for like 20 minutes a day. It's huge. So I think that's awesome that your company does that.
It is one of those things that people ignore. We've always ignored. And, you know, when you start working, you're, you know, that many hours a day, you're not productive. You know, if people were, we used to have talk before COVID where people were saying, okay, let's focus on having, people were talking about 5 hour days, remember? Where they were saying, let's just have people work 5 hour days. Right. And that way they can be really focused and they're going to be a lot more attentive to things. And then they have more downtime, which makes them much more effective when they are working. And, you know, with all the grants, with all the stuff, that's some things that people don't realize, especially people that aren't in a management position. There's so much money being pumped into the economy right now with housing. Some of it has to do with COVID. Some of it has to do with the new administration, that there's so much money out there that clients, agencies, meaning cities, counties, federal agencies, that money that they're trying to get, but they have to have documents in order to do that. And that brings us in as far as compliance or regulatory and technical reports, that the deadlines are insane. They're insane on top of having all the delays with in California with record searches being delayed months and months. And it's, yeah, makes it difficult to work in a balanced manner when you have all these, you know, pressures.
Right. Right. I do know, like, sort of in the field school world and sort of the academic world, there's a lot of similarities to everything you've been saying in terms of how you're running your crews. I mean, I've basically been taking notes. I thought in the last segment, the multicolor thing was genius. So I notice, you know, a lot of these things too, like with the money and for COVID, like I ordered a bunch of tools just like you did, because there was money coming in to the mm-hmm. school, you know, to fight COVID. So you could order tools with the money for COVID, you know, so everyone would have their own toolkit, the exact same thing. I was really surprised just listening to you how similar it is in sort of an academic field school to the things that you're going through. It's like the same, you know, the same trials and slings and arrows, that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah. I come from the Andrew Kinkella pedigree. So any genius I have, any genius I have, I can't take credit for, honestly.
Oh, I know. I give full credit to myself.
Yeah, and are you planning to do like field schools this coming, or, you know, like a, not necessarily even a field school, maybe a field class or a methods class in this coming year for, or anything like that?
Yeah, I've been doing it. So every Saturday, so I have a Saturday class. So in the fall, we did the excavation. And right now, yesterday, you know, we do the field survey. So I really have my ear to the ground in terms of like COVID measures for, you know, archaeology and for outside and to keep people safe. And so I'm doing these things real time. And I'm sure, as Heather and others have experienced, it's a moving goalpost, you know, where like for a while it was so focused on keeping tools clean and don't touching, you know, anything. But then as we learn more, it's like, okay, you want to first and foremost focus on the air aspect of wearing a mask at all times, you know, sort of first and foremost. And so what we do, there's all kinds of little bits and bobs, but the big one is, you know, wearing a mask at all times, even when you're out there like in field survey. And I know it looks silly, and it's probably in a way, if you're outside and the wind's blowing, it almost, you know, too much, but that's okay. You know, like the students who survived, they're fine. And so we just put our mask on, we do our thing, and it's cool. And even for the excavation class, which we did last semester, as we were talking about in the last segment, it's cool to wear a mask. It actually, you know, keeps all the dust out of your lungs. So I felt that wearing a mask was fine, you know, in that situation.
Are you guys doing any sort of, or plan to do with your field school, non-cross group working? So in a sense, like a lot of companies in the UK is essentially, basically, they created teams,
yeah,
and teams were not meant to mix, so that like essentially almost siloing your entire workforce, so that if one silo went down, it wouldn't take down the entire, your entire team, your entire company, whatever. That was one of the things that was implemented over here.
Yeah, silos are kind of the name of the game. I just kind of did that because it seemed like the smart thing to do. So it's silos everywhere. It's like, you don't carpool, but if you do, it's just with your group. And that worked really easily with the excavation team, because let's say we had four units open, and let's say there's four people on each unit. So each of those four people, like, that's their group. You know, oh, you're in group A, you know, and so I did much less moving around of students than I did in the past. Like, they just stayed with their little pocket, you know? And so I thought that worked well too, because that was my thinking, especially early on. It's like, okay, man, if someone gets it, at least, okay, maybe it's just these four over here, you know? And with the carpool things too, that's a huge thing.
And did you guys do any one-way systems? And this is open to everyone. That was one of the things they did basically in the offices, was especially for, you know, lab work and stuff like that, was essentially, you know, work for home where you could, but you can't really take, you know, post X, a lot of it. I mean, there are people who are specialists who you send off to have it looked at, but, you know, a lot of the big sort of processing finds and things like that had to sort of be done in the lab. And so they basically create a bunch of one-way systems throughout most of the companies in the UK during the height of COVID. Some are, you know, we're slowly relaxing some of the stuff that's happened. It used to be, you know, you had to have a 2-meter rule. Now it's down to about a 1 meter. Mm-hmm. Crazy enough, archaeology. So we just had a big health and safety meeting for FAME, Federation of Archaeological Managers and Employers. And basically all the archaeological employers are keeping processes or procedures on that the government has said are no longer needed. So we're weeks and weeks, if not months behind what the official guidance is coming out of government, just to keep the safety levels up. But did you guys end up doing any of that one-way system stuff?
Not exactly, but again, our lab class doesn't start until next semester, and I've already been thinking about this. But in general, since we live in California, I do a much larger piece just outside. Like, outside is your friend, you know. So mm-hmm. I'll have a group of students working outside at all times, which keeps way fewer people inside in the room, you know, and it's way more spaced out. So there's plenty of things, even in the lab, to do outside, like wet screening and this kind of stuff. So I'll have a there's always, it's much more of an outside component since this.
Yeah. And for us, you know, the remote, it used to be that remote really wasn't looked at fondly because, you know, archaeologists are already out of the office quite a bit at the time. And so being mm-hmm. able to have some kind of connection with the PMs that they're working with, or, you know, the other archaeologists, just always being able to kind of come back to center and see each other in the office was definitely a focus. And that was something that was definitely more of a pressure. Now, you know, there's just with the influx of, you know, all these technical or all these electronic or whatever meetings that you can have, Zoom and go-to meeting, yeah, and all these others. It makes it easier for us to connect. I definitely, though, and I think this would be really good for a show, I definitely would like to look at the emotional effects of COVID and how people, unfortunately, can just be rotten to each other. And even though they see each other on a screen, people are more rotten to each other when they're not in each other's presence. And I think that is something we need to start thinking about, because I think that's almost like the next pandemic is dealing with a-holes.
Well, I think
I'll speak for myself.
Next pandemic, I'm pretty sure I've been living through that for like decades now.
Well, hey guys, dealing with a-holes is the new title of this episode. And on that note, let's take a break and go to segment 3. Back in a minute.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back to 232 episode of the CRM podcast. And I was just going to comment on something Heather mentioned at the end of the last segment, which was talking a bit about mental health and how people are dealt with the last 2 years. But it just raised the point that in the UK, so there's always been a really strong push for physical health and safety. Mm-hmm. And mental health is now starting to get wrapped up into that, in that it's now being seen, and the regulations quite haven't got there yet, but they're trying to push bills through the parliament and so forth, where they'd essentially put mental health first aid at the same level as, like, you know, physical first aid. There might be some issues with that, because mental health first aid is a very specific program that came out of Australia and whatnot, but technically under the laws, and they're becoming, I guess you could say they're becoming more enforced, is mental health is at the same level as physical health. Now, in the past, that hasn't been quite enforced, and there hasn't been the pressure from the health and safety executive, the UK's equivalent of OSHA and whatnot, but that's changing quite rapidly. And a lot of employers are also looking at, like, mental health of their staff and how it's, you know, how to make it better, how to make work a lot better, as it were, how to deal with, how to have fewer assholes, as it were, I believe Heather was describing them as. But it was just to see, have you guys also noticed, maybe at your work or in general out there, a push to tackle the sort of mental health aspect of COVID and the changes that, you know, it was tough on a lot of people, still is tough on a lot of people for their mental health. Big changes. Not everyone enjoys working from home. I know pre-COVID, we actually lost a member of staff because they they didn't want to work from home. They actually wanted to go into an office and see people. And this is before even COVID hit. And so, you know, not everyone enjoys working from home. So what has your guys' experience been with this?
So first of all, you said you lost a member of staff, meaning they went to another school?
No. So it was a company.
Oh,
so
okay.
it was good. We had a conversation and they said, you know, I've been doing remote work at this organization for over a decade. So we were doing remote work before it was cool. And so we don't really have offices. We work from home. It's not a big company, just a couple of people. But
okay.
One of our staff members, he was great, but so I was line managing him and we had a conversation where he said, you know, he liked the working for us, but he just wanted to like have that experience of being able to go into and see other people and not work from his bedroom. And that was fair enough. So we helped him. I think he had like two interviews we helped him prep for. Like, so it was, very mutual. It worked out. We were, for lack of a better word, you know, like if I can tell you right now, if anyone's listening, be careful. I've been to employers where you mentioned, you know, you might be moving on in 6 months or something like that. And like the tone switches and they instantly become assholes towards you.
Right, right.
Like, how dare you leave us? And you're like, it's archaeology. It's not for life with a company. Yeah. Moving around's good, whatever. But like, so if anyone's listening, this is not typical. Our company's not typical. We had a really good conversation. We said, you know, because we offered like, you know, maybe he could go into like a WeWork sort of thing if he wanted like that. But he was really looking for like, actually not just like leaving his house, but
interaction with the team, physical interaction with the team.
Yeah. And so that's what he was looking for. So for his health, we helped him move on to a different job.
That's awesome.
With a different organization.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be the only one. I know quite a few people. I have family members who've just had absolutely horrible last 2 years being locked. Okay, not locked indoors, but not being able to go out like they had been. And it's really tough.
Well, if you look at the old adage of, you know, when people retire and then they end up spending a lot of time with each other, and it's not always the good thing. Like, I mean, a married couple and they're like, oh my, they're under each other's feet. And I definitely think, I mean, I've experienced that. I think my family is so sick and tired of having me here and me going, shh, 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 you know, and I'm in a meeting, you know, they're just like, we're all on top of each other. And I have kids, one in college and one in high school. And so everybody's on top of each other. And I think that is definitely, people are sick. They're just sick of that. And it's something that puzzles me because you are looking at someone on a screen. So why is it? I'm definitely, and I don't think it's just the pressures of more work and everything. I definitely think that people treat each other differently now that we're not in each other's presence. And it's really bothersome to me. And some people have handled this well, this COVID thing well, as far as how they treat each other. And some have not. Some have gone, it's just like exacerbated their a-holery or whatever you call it.
Right.
And go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I think some of it is kind of a bleed over from social media too, where it's like, you know, I'm free to give you a thumbs down. And since I don't have my real name on there, I'm going to talk about how crappy your presentation was, you know, or whatever. And I think they feel more free because they've already had an experience with that world.
Yeah,
I'd be a jerk.
It reminds me of, what is that like in the Colosseum where the ruler would go thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah.
That's what it, but I, as far as working remotely, we have been having surveys for the company I work with or work for. We have had surveys that happen probably every couple months where they're sending it out and asking people, what do you want to do? Like, are you going to want a hybrid? Do you want to do full remote?
Right.
Do you want to be in person 100% of the time? And so over the time, and also understanding that those things change and we have to, you know, there's some things that are completely out of the company's control. They have to lock it down sometimes just because that's what the government says. But there, you know, our company specifically has been really trying to make happen what that employee wants. And so what they do is they look at it and they say, okay, here we have people, these people want to go in every single day. And these people are open to just doing hybrid, and these people don't want to go in at all.
Right.
And they're doing staggered presence in the office and a schedule. So there's a schedule that you have to follow. If you want to go in the office, okay, let's look at to make sure we don't have too many people in the office. And so there's an actual plan of when you're going to go in the office. And that's, you know, obviously for some people, everybody would just like to be able to have the freedom to go in the office when they want to go. But right now we can't do that totally. Hopefully it's, we can get back to that some soon.
Yeah.
But no, anyway, that's been great. One solution.
You know, again, because these are real nuts and bolts things, because everyone gives lip service to like, oh, mental health. But it's like, OK, what are your nuts and bolts things that you're going to do? I did two things. So I'm going to brag about myself now. I know this is brand new.
It never happens.
Never happens. But I sat down at the beginning of the pandemic. And I'm like, what can I do for my students? Like, what can I, you know, do just to make them feel good? Because for young people, this is awful. You know, they don't get to interact. So I did two things. The first thing I did was I made this sort of manifesto that I send them out as my very first email to them. And it basically says, hey, we're going to learn a lot about archaeology, but you know what? We're going to have fun. Remember fun? I do. We're going to have fun. And how are we going to have fun? We're going to have office hours, online office hours. Where, you know, as we learn, it's going to be joyous. And in the office hours, we can just talk about whatever. And I made this big, long list of, you know, stuff you could talk about. Oh, surfing, riding bikes, whatever, a new book you read. And actually, one of my students read my manifesto on TikTok, and I think it blew up. I think it got like thousands of hits. And then the other thing I did are the online office hours. I had them at really weird times. Like I have one on Wednesdays from 11 p.m. to midnight.
Wow.
And so it becomes this like cool thing. Awesome. Right. Yeah. It's like beyond school where people can just go to hang and bro out and we joke and laugh. And so it's a way to use Zoom to just like have everyone chill, have everyone talk about whatever. Hey, what's your, you know, the new show on Netflix that you've watched? And I've found that those late night office hours, I think, have really helped a lot of people, myself included.
That's I like that. We have staff meetings, like just the staff, my staff specifically. And it's a staff meeting. We call it Team Awesome. You know, I know it's cringy. It's cringy.
You cringe it out. Who cares? It's what people want.
We sit there and it's like, if you want to have a drink, you can have a drink. And it's not the, like, you know, people are doing, oh, let's do the company happy hour. Our staff, we really like each other. Like, we don't even, it's not just like, we love each other. We truly love each other. And so we just sit and we do talk about work, but a lot of times it can go on for like an hour and a half, 2 hours of just people, I don't know, just venting, or it's just a space. People can say whatever they want. And that for me, I actually, you know, like I'm older. I come from I'm not married.
Yes, Grandma, please. Yes. Enlighten us.
I don't like saying that, Andrew. That's not a thing I like saying. But what I'm saying is I also come from the Midwest. So maybe that's part of it. But it is this, you know, you have to have some separation between the people that you supervise and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it actually is probably akin to the same thing with professors. And I think, yes, as long as you're professional, I think knocking down that wall is essential, especially right now when it comes to wellness.
Absolutely.
And letting everyone know that we're all people. Okay, yeah, I'm your supervisor, but we're all people. We have all the same we don't have the same problems, but we all have problems and we all have frustrations, and it's okay to communicate that. And when you communicate it, then others communicate it. And it's not about having a bitch session, although sometimes those are appropriate and necessary, but it's about being real, you know, and that's the one thing that you've always done amazingly well, Andrew, and why you're so popular as a professor is that you remove that wall. But I think it's really important. And I think in general, people should be doing that in the workplace. And there's a, you know, what we call code switching, right? There's a time where we our professional, and then there's a time where we need to sit back and allow each other to see each other, to know each other, to, you know, to have compassion. If you don't have that, you're not going to have compassion for each other.
Absolutely. And at the end of the day, I always tell my students, I'm like, look, we're all primates. We're social animals. Like, you can't get away from it. You can say you're antisocial, but you're not. You know, and so I know, like you've said, those meetings go very, really long. My office hours will roll and roll and roll. And I don't mind. I've been on at like 1 a.m, you know, and I'm like, whatever. I can tell that they need to just connect and be human beings. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just a quick comment on that. Like, just a slight disagreement, Andrew. Some people really are introverted. And the only thing I'd have to say is, if anyone's doing like those mental health things, is definitely don't make them mandatory.
Oh,
because you know there are some people who have absolutely loved working from home and not having to see another single human being for 2 years.
Of course.
And if they could go for 20 years, that would be their ideal situation. I think that's it's important to, like, you know, different paths for different people, but. It was just with those things with the different handle mental health differently.
People on the spot, because I know that. I mean, there's a portion of myself that's a kind of an introverted loner, actually, and so I feel no for way. Them, but there's the other part, Andrew, that, you know.
Yeah, Andrew, I just want to say that you're now truly a part of the podcast because Doug is disagreeing with you. So you know that is where you come in to play.
Good. So, okay, I'm gonna need to make my voodoo doll now.
Hey, so in the last few minutes of this podcast, guys, in segment one, we talked about some stuff where, you know, what are some good things, some lasting effects that actually are gonna come out of the pandemic. I wanna hear, and I'll start. What is one thing you're happy to see gone that is a result of the pandemic? Something we're not doing anymore. And leading off of what Heather was saying a couple of minutes ago about compassion, I think we've all started thinking about each other's health, mental health when it comes to remote working, but health when it comes to, hey, I'm sick. Maybe I shouldn't go hang out around other people, even if it's not COVID, and thinking about other people. I think that's one lasting thing that I hope stays from the pandemic. And that's something... As far as what's gone is the lack of that concern. That's what I'm saying is good. So let's go around the room. How about you, Andrew?
The one thing, the good that's gone, I do not miss handshaking at all.
Handshaking. Andrew, man, you are just killing me today in this episode. Like, I so miss handshaking. Like, a good, solid handshake. I've missed it. It's been years.
You have the problem. Your friends will die out, and it'll be okay. It'll be a new world of no handshaking.
Ouch!
I want to take handshaking out of the masculinity equation because men, especially, and even some women who feel like they have to, just like try to crush every bone in your hand as a measure of who they are. Screw that.
The pain.
You know.
Yes.
I personally am with Doug on this one. I do like handshakes and I like hugs. Yeah. I like hugs and I miss that.
A hug, a good hug, you know, but also like, so I realize not everyone, you know, different people have different things, but like with good friends, I do miss like hugging good friends and stuff like that. Yeah. And I realize obviously I would not hug someone I've just met because that's really awkward. I know sometimes handshakes can be quite awkward, people you miss, but like, yeah, I don't know, like physical contact with like friends and family, I'm missing that.
Whatever, Doug, don't give me your diseases, okay?
You're all the way from Scotland. I don't think that's possible. So. That's right.
I do have one positive one, you know, that I think has happened, and it's sort of the ability to actually do real work over Zoom and real work remotely. I've seen a lot of people in the archaeology world, other archaeologists, kind of working together where we wouldn't have before, and actually doing older collections and stuff because we had to stay in. So that was actually a positive.
Yeah. And for me. You know, there's just been this thing against having, and I understand why, having archaeologists from other regions work in a region they don't have any experience in. And just out of necessity, we've been flying people in from all over the country to work on projects, larger projects in California and Arizona. And And I actually think that that stigma is starting to dissipate. And I think it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. As long as it's controlled, as long yeah. as the work is done under supervision, and it allows people to get some kind of experience over time until they've really kind of cemented their knowledge of the region. I think that is huge. And you know why? One of the things I think is huge is that there are parts in this country that are paying ridiculous hourly wages for archaeologists. And so when you have people that are coming in from wherever they're coming in, they're making $13 an hour. I may be exaggerating a little bit.
No.
And they come to California and they're realizing what they can get paid. I think it's going to even out and bring the hourly wage up for archaeologists. Yeah. And I think that's key, along with mixing other ideas. There's nothing wrong with having somebody from the East Coast come in, because they're going to have a whole new fresh eye. Even though they may not know the region, may not know the materials, you can teach them that. But their understanding of how to do archaeology is going to be different than those in California. And I think that's a good mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Doug, really quickly, what's your one thing you won't miss from the pandemic?
I don't think I mean, everything we've kind of mentioned have been sort of trends that were kicking off beforehand that just got, basically we flipped a switch and you had to do because of COVID restrictions, and it instantly kicked in with, digital and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if I'm seeing anything that, I guess, I don't know. I think it'd be more gradual, but just the way we used everything, how we dealt with mental health and health in general for archaeologists in the past, I hope we do not go back to that. I hope we keep, I'm not going to say we're at the best that we can be. I think there's still a lot of work to do, but I would hope we keep moving in the direction we're going as opposed to heading back to where we were.
Okay. I like it. All right, guys. Well, this has been a great episode. Honestly, I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of this, but I think it's a good episode, good discussions to have. And I hope everybody at their workplaces and in the field in general are having these discussions. So let's embrace the things that have come out of COVID and say goodbye to the things that have left and move on and be better for
Amen.
It. With that, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks. That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.arcpodnet.com/CRMArcPodcast. Please comment and share anywhere you see the show. If you'd like us to answer a question in a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website, or just email chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Support the show and the network at arcpodnet.com/members. Get some swag and extra content while you're there. Send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Thanks to everyone for joining me this week. Thanks also to the listeners for tuning in, and we'll see you in the field. Goodbye.
See you guys later.
Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Doug is counting down from 1,500 in the chat.
Oh, my goodness.
He's got 2 more seconds before I hit end on the recording.
Doug, what Goodbye. A sound for misery.
There it is. This episode was produced by Chris Webster from his RV traveling the United States, Tristan Boyle in Scotland, DigTech LLC, Culturo Media, and the Archaeology Podcast Network, and was edited by Chris Webster.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.